Welcome to the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Dax, Quark, Tom, and Harry. Your hosts for today are my fellow Trek actors, Terry Farrell, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong. For the complete version of this amazing, amazing podcast, please check out patreon.com/the Delta Flyers and sign up to become a patron today to get your awesome bonus material. Hello, Yay. Robbie McNeil. Hello,
Terry sir. Farrell.
Hello.
Hello. Hey.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Guess what I got in the
madame.
Mail?
What'd you
get? What do you have?
Sirs.
Oh, I know what you got.
Yeah, you got the shirt.
I'm showing off my left breast.
You sure were.
It looks so much better with this. Love it.
Isn't it so
nice?
And comfy and you can sleep in it. Okay.
I have the woman's version.
Yes.
Of course you do.
Of course I do.
We have so many sizes. We did a big order of these shirts because it's the launch of DS9. It's the launch of a whole new journey for us, journey through the wormhole. But
it's beautiful.
It's a cool shirt.
Rebecca did an awesome job.
Yeah. If you're not a Patreon patron, if you're a Patreon patron at the level that gets the perk of this shirt with your Patreon membership, if you're not one of those people, you can still get this shirt at our store, at our merch store, which is thedeltaflyers.org. Go to the store there. You can buy one. We have tons of sizes. We did a big order because it's such a cool shirt.
It is such a cool shirt. And then you need to come to conventions and have us sign them.
Yes. We also have our episode shirt. We have a large quantity of our Voyager episode shirt. So for those of you who missed out on that, that is also available on the store.
There's
in the store.
Cool stuff. There's cool stuff. There's stickers and mugs and I don't know what else is there. I don't know what's in stock, but you better check it out before we're sold out again. Anyway,
oh boy.
I know.
I'm checking it out.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
I need to have my swag.
Yeah, you do. Well, you got your shirt now.
I've got my shirt now.
You're starting.
I am starting.
How's life, Terry? What's going on?
Well, it's really good. I'm about to actually, my producer, Mark Altman, from our Boldly Going, our documentary about the greatest Star Trek locations ever filmed.
I love it. It's very exciting.
Yeah, so excited. I think we have like $110,000 on our
Kickstarter.
Our Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I'm bad at those things. Details. So we're doing really good. And, you know, the more we get, of course, the more we can show and the more we can do, more guests we can have. And we're really excited about it. And I think we're going to start filming this summer.
That's great. I saw the link that you sent me of all the locations and I was scrolling through like some of the places they're going to go and explore and film. It's amazing. Yeah. Like
it is going to be amazing.
It's going to be amazing. There's so many locations on that list of your documentary that I didn't even connect with. And I'm like, oh my God, not just Star Trek was filmed there, but other stuff that was filmed there. Like,
Yeah. And we're going to talk about the histories too of these locations, which is going to be really exciting. I'm mostly excited for San Francisco because there's such great food there. But we have different producers on this than the documentaries of our show. So these guys did 1982 and they get stuff out faster. So hopefully, but here is the little QR code.
Inglorious Trexperts.
Yeah, the Inglorious Trexperts and Terry Farrell take you. Yeah, to boldly go. And you go to makethetrek.com. So now, you know, being that I'm the host and we haven't started filming yet, I feel like I should know this for sure. But I'm not sure if it's called To Boldly Go or if it's called
boldly
Make
going?
The Trek.
Or Make
Do
the Trek.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. How does someone donate to this Kickstarter? What's the... Is there a web address?
You go to makethetrek.com.
Okay. make the trip
to support us to go to these amazing locations.
Okay.
I'm well, so excited.
Everybody should go to that website, whether you can, you know, support or not, because there's some great history just described on the website. It's
so
awesome.
Does the website show all the locations that will be that they will be filming at? Is that on the website?
Did you see that, Robbie?
I did see it. It shows a lot of locations, but I think there's going to be more. That's what I took away from it. Like, here's some of them. And there's a lot they're showing, but I think they're going to keep going and do more is the impression.
Yeah, we're on February 1 right now. We're not filming it till this summer. So everything's not set in stone yet.
Yeah.
But you there's a bunch of groovy things, you know, like limited edition pins, and they're going to be autographs. And right now there's these groovy jackets that say to boldly go on them. I was thinking, none of them have been taken yet. I think they're like $75. I was thinking, I think I might want to get one.
Huh.
That sounds
I don't
great.
Know if they give me one. Like, I got this fabulous shirt from the Delta Flyers.
I wonder
the wormhole.
I wonder if these producers took the cue from the away missions for the Voyager documentary. Because the away missions for the Voyager documentary were all locations where they filmed different Trek episodes. So I feel like maybe they were like, hey, that's a great idea. Let's make our entire documentary about this, is what it
I don't
seems
know. I'd have to ask them. I mean, Mark Altman is, and they're, it's the Inglorious Trekspertz. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen those guys talk or any of their interviews?
I've heard
they
of
have
them,
a podcast too.
Yeah.
Great guys.
Is that a play on the Ashley title, Inglorious Bastards? So they're the Inglorious Trekspertz? Is that kind of where they're
from?
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
That's very exciting, though, Terry.
And good for you.
You're
going to
be the perfect host for this.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
They picked a good person. That's for
sure.
Oh, thank you. When they asked me, I was just like, oh, my God, 100%. How much fun. And we need to get like a van. And so we're, you know, going to get a mobile home and travel to all these places. And mobile home. What am I saying? An RV.
An RV. Yeah.
Sounds fun.
Terry, I've got a camper. If you guys need to borrow it, you can come grab my camper. Yeah. It's got bed and all the stuff in it. That's pretty sweet.
What?
He's got it all.
Yeah. I got your back.
That's a great idea.
Any way I can help you.
That's a great tie-in too, Robbie. Yeah. You might have to come in and check in on us to make sure we're treating it right.
Let's jump into this episode, written by Peter Allen Fields, directed by none other than Uncle Les Landau. That's what we call him. We called him Uncle Les.
Love him.
Yeah,
agreed.
Yeah, so
he was my director crush.
Oh, we loved him too.
Mine too.
Right?
Robbie's crush as well.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Such a nice guy. He was funny, smart. Yeah.
Yeah. Guest stars: Brian Keith as Mullabok, Aaron Eisenberg as Nog, Nicholas Wirth as the Lesepian captain, Michael Bofshever as Minister Turan, Terrence Evans as Baltram, one of the mute Bajorans, Annie O'Donnell as the other mute Bajoran as Kina, and Daniel Riordan as one of the guards, the first guard that spoke.
Yeah. I wonder if they made them mute Bajorans to save money. Like, literally, hey, we can hire them for extra prices and not pay them if they don't speak. So we'll just write in the... That was what I was thinking.
That's probably right. But wouldn't they get a bump up as being featured extras, Robbie?
Yes,
where they would
but
get
it's
a
like
little
a
bit extra.
Fraction.
Not as much.
And they don't get residuals. Yeah. And it's just like a real cheat. It's a Paramount cheat.
Yeah.
But you know what else it is? It's a great storyline to also tell us how despicable and horrible and horrific
the Cardassians were. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like, you know,
I will give you that.
All right. Let's do some poetry.
Let's do some poetry. Poetry is very short today.
Oh, is it? Okay. Can we start with yours and then Robbie's? I'll start with yours. We'll go to Robbie and then I'd love to end
Because I don't know it's my best work, but I just...
I love your poetry.
Okay. Holding on by tooth and nail, death of opportunities to no avail. Open your eyes and see change as blessings for thee.
Wow.
Change as
blessings for thee.
And it was like a little biblical or Shakespearean. It was very, for thee.
I like
that. Well, see, what else is there besides thee? I just couldn't think of anything.
Good. It's good. It's good. Right? It's really good. All right.
Thank you.
Here's my goofy limerick that really Bob Picardo would tell me is horrible. with the rhythm and the rhyme and all of it. But I'm gonna go with it. Here we go. For progress.
Yes.
The limerick. They try to push Mullabok around, but his love of his planet is profound. Nog wants to be a boss, and he starts with yamak sauce. Then Kira burns Millibok's house to the ground.
Wow.
Wow. I don't know. I think that's
boss
pretty
and
great.
Sauce is what he did on that one.
Yeah. I like the sauce. Yeah. The yamak sauce was huge.
I had to work that in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out how to do it. A I boss. Just went for sauce. The other story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Haiku, okay. My friend.
Haiku time. Haiku time. Here we go. Yes. My haiku. Did you notice, Terry? Robbie pronounced it progress, the UK way of saying
that's
progress.
What Armin told us.
Yes.
Oh. Armin
progress
told us.
In England. Yes. Progress in America. Progress yes. And progress. Here is my haiku for progress/progress. Moon core to heat homes. Settlers must evacuate. Uncle Bill won't go.
Uncle Bill?
Family Affair. That's his main character that he played.
Oh,
Bill. I know.
I
but right
that.
When you say Bill, in this context, I think of Shatner. So it's kind of funny. Oh, it's like
Uncle Bill. Uncle Bill Shatner.
Papa
won't
Bill.
I won't leave this homestead because I am Shatner. Okay, no. Uncle Bill from Family Affair. Isn't that the most notable? Doesn't everyone know Brian Keith from that series? Both of you are
so
old enough to know that.
Buffy and Jody.
You know, you don't have to bring age into this, Garrett. I am
always.
Just the right
okay,
age.
All of us
you
are
know
old
what?
Enough
I think because he
that.
Keeps wanting to point out that we're older than him. That's
no, well, we're,
not
we're
that
all,
nobody can tell.
Listen, we're all 60s babies. We are all 60s babies. All three of us, right? So
yeah,
we
so
all
what are you,
know.
Like 69? You're like 68. The end of
68. No, 68. 1968. I'm four after Robbie and I'm five after you, right?
You're
come on.
But
age is just
you know
a number,
what?
Guys.
I can't
we're
stand.
All, what?
But he's still a baby.
What I can't stand is that technically I am the same. I am a boomer. Technically.
Yeah, 64. Me too.
But I am
which
not.
Is the same
right?
As my father. No, you're
yes.
Not.
Right.
You're Gen X.
I'm Gen X. Thank you.
Yes,
how
you
can
are.
I be the same
you're
generation
so
as my
Gen
father?
Oh, yeah. I know.
Yeah. What? Does that make you upset that you are the same generation as your father, though, Robbie? Do you
yes,
feel like
it
you
doesn't make sense. I don't think it. You can't be the same generation as your parent.
Okay. How
it's
about
not
this?
Possible.
You're not boomer. You're boomer light.
I'm Boomex.
You're Boomex or you're Boomerang Boomex. Or something different. Boomex.
Well,
Boomex.
Here's the thing, though. I do think there is a difference in, of course, this has nothing to do with the show, but I think that we're boomers has more to do with how we invest our money and our kind of our work ethic and how we move through the world is much more like our parents than the Gen X
generation. Like how
that's
you sort
my...
of take care of your home, your security, your life.
I didn't have Max until I had a career and I could afford to be an at-home mom. Those things were really important to me. I wasn't going to have a child unless I could afford one. That was so important to me.
Oh, I just
because
had kids all
poor,
over the place. I didn't care.
You
if
did.
I could.
Willy-nilly. You're
willy-nilly.
Just like, she's going to let me do it, and I'm all over that.
Go for
it. No, thank you.
No, I didn't mean like that. But I mean, I wasn't thinking that. I was just thinking for me, being the oldest,
no, it totally makes
I felt
sense.
Like I had to, you know.
Mm-hmm. You had to be responsible, and you had to have an income, and you had to have the wherewithal to raise a child, which is a very boomer way of looking at it, a boom generation, right?
I couldn't count on my parents' inheritance. I wasn't going to inherit anything.
Right.
That's not the family I came from in middle class. So to me, I guess that's how
for
boomer
me,
speaks to me.
For me, boomer speaks to me that I grew up trying to emulate Brian Keith as Uncle Bill.
I could see
I wanted
that
to be
in
his kid. I wanted to be little Jody.
Yeah, but you know what? You look like you could have been his kid.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I thought that watching that.
Really?
And I really liked his character.
Yeah.
He was great. By the way,
I thought so too.
I read something that Rick Berman was like, I didn't think Brian Keith was going to be that good. He was better than I thought. And I was like, what?
But
Brian
the writer
Keith
was
incredible.
Happy, the writer was not happy with it, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'll get to that. We'll get to that when we get
I think
get
Brian
on.
Keith was phenomenal, and his naturalism was refreshing for Star Trek because they pushed us into this anti-naturalism, all of us on that generation of shows.
And I fought it.
I didn't fight much of anything. I was like, I'll do whatever you say. Just let me direct. So.
Okay. Can I? So, Robbie, what you said about Rick Berman, his yes. quote was, "I think it turned out real nice. The end is rather bittersweet. Brian Keith gave a performance that was very interesting and was in many ways better than I expected. It's a very poignant story in the relationship between Major Kira and this old man." So that's Berman. Writer yeah. Peter Allen Fields was not happy with how Mullabok came across in the finished episode. Oh. According to Fields, he'd written the Bajoran as a much more manipulative and less likable character. "I wanted a strong guy who did not change at the end. There are too many old guys in television dramas who start out nasty and then get meek and gentle at the end. That's not what I wanted." To help illustrate what he meant, Fields cited the scene wherein Mullabok asked Kira for her given name. In the script, the question was specifically used to manipulate Kira. He said it because he was trying to con her. But in the final episode, it seems as if Mullabok feels a degree of warmth for her. Fields specified he didn't fault Brian Keith's performance, but instead, Mullabok simply comes across as too sympathetic a figure. He is less of an adversary than he ought to have been. He was less of a mountain for Kira to climb. There you go. So that's his opinion. Yeah, he's very specific about that.
The interesting thing is writers can write whatever they want. That's mm-hmm. the first time you make the movie.
Yeah.
And then you film it. That's the second time you make a different movie. Because right. it's never yeah.
What the writer initially intended, yes.
Yeah, and as a director, I know I'm making the second version. I'm not making the movie they wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Because things occur to you when you're putting it on its feet, when you're out on the floor doing it, where you go, right. that doesn't make sense. Or this yeah. just doesn't play.
Yeah.
Or the actor. So that's the second time. And then the third time is in the editing room. You make a third movie. There's three yeah. versions of that. So,
yeah.
he, you know, for him
you
to get
hung
up
on. You need the writer on the set. I mean, yeah, you need the writer on the set. The lead yes. writer to the show then should be on the set. But we all know that the real directors are the producers in television.
Yeah. But I've been on sets where writers are there and the writer will say to me, I don't think that's how it should be. I think it should be like this. And I'll yeah. listen to them. And if I think what's happening on the set is the best version with these actors in this moment that we're going to get, and it's working, if something is happening that an audience would pay attention to, I don't care what the writer's note is often. You know,
well, how do you deal with right. that though, Robbie?
Well, your job is telling the story, a yeah. story that's going to touch yes. people, right?
I think the truth is the director... There's only one director. That's a DGA. That's the number one rule in yeah. the DGA, my union, is that there's one director, one, that's it. And so the actors aren't the director. The writer's mm-hmm. not the director. The DP's not the director. The line producer's not. There's one.
Right.
And mm-hmm. the only option, and I've been a producer with a director who might be struggling, who I get frustrated with. My only two options are to help support them to get what I want, or to fire them. That's the only right. two options. I can't say, no, don't do it like that. Put the camera here and have them do this. I can't do that because I'm not the director. There's one mm-hmm. director.
Yeah.
So.
But what about when the writer is upset and saying, hey, this is not what I really envisioned this character in this scene to go this way. Well, how do you, and you
I,
know
I will
that,
say, I hear you. Say to, I can okay. see what you're describing, but that's not what we're going to get today.
Got it.
We right.
can't, you know, I can't get that out of this actor. They're not. I've tried to have the conversation and they don't agree with that.
Mm.
And then often right. the writer will say, well, I want to, let me talk to them. One director. Nope.
Yeah.
I'm the director.
No, yeah.
I'll talk to them and golly. I'll tell you if we can do it, but you right. can't talk to them.
Yeah.
Because now we've got multiple directors and everything becomes
and
chaos.
That undermines yeah. our confidence as actors.
Yes.
If you feel like everyone's telling you. Yeah. It's
yeah.
so confusing. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I feel like, you know, when you're saying I didn't just do what they told me to do. I felt like I was just trying to do what they told me to do. And I could see in those, like in this last episode we yeah. did, was it Battle Lines when it was me mm-hmm. and Chief O'Brien in the runabout.
In the shuttle. Yeah.
Yeah. In the shuttle. I felt you could tell that I was confident. I felt fine.
Absolutely.
Right. And it was the director and it was working with Colm. Mm-hmm. And we'd gone enough episodes in that I had already had the Ivana Chubbuck helping me say, don't listen to them.
Those producer notes.
Yeah. Executive producers. Yeah. I sat down and they said, we want you to be, Rick Berman said, I want you to be like Grace Kelly and Yoda. And that was the best I could do with that note. I didn't know what to do with that note. And now somebody else might have taken that note and gone, had an aha moment, because yeah. somewhere in his head that made sense and he saw it and it was real. I mean, I'm not trying to poo-poo it. I'm just like saying I couldn't do it.
I don't know how.
I could not embody that.
Yes.
First of all, Grace Kelly is just like, okay, that's hair and makeup looking elegant and holding yourself. But Yoda, you don't even write me like Yoda. I don't know what that means.
No, I don't think that was as descriptive as you could. I mean, that really, hey, Yoda.
That's like
and Grace
a line
Kelly.
Reading you don't get.
No, because like your idea of Yoda is maybe different than his idea of Yoda. Your idea of Grace Kelly is different than his. He needs to be more descriptive. And when he just throws that out, I think that's a disservice to you. It's more confusing than enlightening.
Yes,
in a way.
Because then you should not say those titles. You get specific about what about those people.
Yeah, what
and
about
honestly,
those people that you see? Exactly.
I was so nervous. I didn't even think to ask that, but that's what I should have asked. Yeah, you know, there's something for the future. If somebody says something that confuses me, I need you to be more specific. That's a little too.
What is it about Grace Kelly that you see in this character? And what is it about Yoda that you see in this character? The blend of those two. What traits, what characteristics? And then I can work off of that. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So,
all right.
We can't change what's already happened, but future.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
We start on a shot of playing cards. We follow the cards up to who's holding them. It's young Jake. Jake and Nog are playing cards in Quark's, and it looks like they're not open for business yet. I think this is sort of a, you know, after hours or before hours before Quark's opens up.
Yeah.
But we do see Quark walking down a spiral staircase, chastising who I thought was Rom, but it's not. It's a Ferengi employee, Broik, I think, for not canceling.
Oh, I thought it was Rom, too.
It's not Rom. If you look closely, it's not Rom. Yeah, I wrote Rom, and I was like, that's not Rom. So he chastises this Ferengi employee for not canceling this large order of 5,000 rapages. I don't even know what a rapage is. I have no clue. But 5,000 rapages of Cardassian yamek sauce. Nog overhears this and his lobes start tingling. There is an opportunity for profit. Jake is just not getting it. Jake's like, well, I'm quitting playing this game because you're not playing it with me. But I want to make one comment about Jake's hair looks completely different in this very opening scene.
Oh, really?
Maybe the lighting coming down. Yeah, maybe. But it looks like he has long hair. It's pulled back into a ponytail. It just.
I don't think he did.
Wow.
He did not have that. But
I
that's
did not
what it
notice
looked
that.
Like. It almost like they put, or the hair department said, let's put relaxer in your hair and change the consistency of your hair.
Oh, I'm going to go back and watch.
You got to look at it.
I don't remember saying that.
Completely different.
It must be lighting. Bizarre. Well, here's my comment on this first scene.
Yeah.
I saw that Les Landau was directing this. I had high expectations and he exceeded expectations in this first shot.
Yes.
The very first shot, as you described, comes up the cards. Mm-hmm. You see a close up, reveals another actor, then finds them coming down the stairs, then plays the boys in the foreground with Quark and I thought Rom in the background.
Right.
Plays it through that. And then as they leave, it pushes in a knot. Like it was elegant beyond my expectations.
Yeah.
Les knocked it out of the park. This is the first time for me that I've seen on this series first season.
Yes.
That kind of sophisticated direction, camera direction.
Yeah.
It is the most, by far, the most sophisticated camera shot making on this series yet.
Yeah.
And he continues to do it throughout the episode.
Well, I think, Robbie, I think we expect no less from Uncle Les.
Yes, agreed.
In a way. He always brings it. He always brings it. And it's a great shot. You're right. We have an exterior shot of the station with a station log by Commander Sisko. With the help of the Federation, the Bajorans are about to tap the molten core of Bajor's fifth moon, Jurado.
I don't like about these, when he has his star date, he competes with the music. They have the music way too loud. You can't hear what he's saying.
Yeah, sometimes
that should have been dialed down, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, not that the music isn't elegant and beautiful, but it should not be more prominent. You shouldn't fight to hear his words.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
Okay,
I've
thank you for letting me interrupt.
Too.
Of course.
No, I totally agree with you.
And we want you to interrupt us at any point, please. Okay, we need that. This will be a massive, massive energy transfer. We then jump over to ops, and Sisko is with Minister Tirana, a Bajoran minister, Both Dax and O'Brien brief Sisko on the current status of the moon's core. Minister Taran asks if what O'Brien reports is good or not. And this is awesome because he's like, what's that blinking light? Which we never see that on Voyager where people are asking us what's going on with our console. Yeah. But this guy's clueless. He's very nervous. He's a civil servant. He holds an elected office clearly, and he doesn't know anything about what's happening. But Kira reassures him, okay, if something was wrong, they'd tell you about it. Mm-hmm. But he says that Bajor is counting on this energy to heat not a thousand, but hundreds of thousands of homes on Bajor. And Kira is now off to perform another inspection of the moon to make sure that all the evacuations have gone according to plan.
I loved this scene because the way, again, I'm going to say it a lot, the way that Les shot it, you got to see all of the characters on Ops falling into the background of shots.
Was it a one-er, Robbie, in this one too?
I think there was some coverage in it at the end, but it just elegantly flowed out of that first scene so beautifully.
You use elegant, Robbie. I'm going to add another adjective, as effortless is the other adjective I would like to throw in there.
I like that they were all together. I don't remember being in that corner very often, if at all, more than a couple of times. But it was a really nice having us all together.
Yeah, that's a higher part of quarters. Ops. Is that right, Terry? That's the higher part?
Yeah. And so if you're looking at Avery's office, it would be to your right.
To the right if you're looking at the office, right? So if Avery comes out of the office, he would go left.
The left.
And that's where that area is, up high. Yeah.
Up high.
It was a great place to put it. And I find it interesting that you say, I don't remember being there often, because I think Les designed it this way.
Yeah.
And you're right. When it's just close-ups of you all separated in different parts of Ops, you feel very detached. This felt like the team was all working together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Really great. I love when Dax says, now we're on the Ganges.
We're on the Ganges. Yes,
so we're Dax and Kira are scanning for inhabitants. And, that they should have evacuated. And they talk about Morn asking Dax out on a date. And she thinks, we learn that she thinks his face hairs are very cute. Which I never would have guessed. That was a surprise.
But she turned him down. Remember, she said she was busy. But Kira is shocked. Right. However, the 7 or 8 wiry hairs coming out of his head make him look kind of cute.
And did he really have wiry heads?
He does have wiry hairs on his wiry head. He has wiry heads and wiry hairs. Yes.
He did have wiry hairs coming out. That's gross.
It's cute. Still funny though.
I find it interesting that Dax.
I am not Dax. Believe it or not, I'm just Terry Farrell. I do not find them attractive at all.
That alien. However, I also love that they talk about having a conversation with Morn, who never speaks in the entire world of the series.
That's another very funny thing.
People talk about him talking, but we never hear him talk.
We never hear him talk.
Apparently, they gave him lines, but it didn't really work out.
Exactly. Dax does notice that her sensors show a humanoid presence in Sector 15 Delta. And she wonders if that's one of the thermologists down there, the Bajoran thermologist, preparing for this molten core tapping. But they're saying, no, that's definitely not a thermologist. So Kira decides that she needs to transport down there to investigate.
Mm-hmm. And she transports out of the back of the runabout, goes down to the planet. And they've called it a moon at this point.
Yes.
And then we see her beam in. Yeah. And that's the nicest moon I've ever seen in my life.
It's beautiful. It is. It is.
It's a beautiful nice moon. Yeah. I didn't believe that moons could be that beautiful.
Yeah.
And then I actually looked it up. There's plants. I would expect a moon to look like, you know, planet.
A moon.
Hell, like rocks.
Our moon. Yeah. Or just
our moon. Yeah. But there really are moons. I looked this up because I was like, why did they dropped the ball? There are moons that could support life
that could be lush like that too, and have Robbie on
okay,
a site.
Okay, what website is that? Are you kidding?
I can't remember.
He can't remember.
It's the Googles.
It's
Robbie's
the Googles.
Good like that. Robbie. So on a side note, in the last episode we recapped, we talked about the Navat.
The circle, the
and
square.
The Paku. No, the yes. Paku and the Navat. Okay.
Yes.
And they said that there's a Bajoran saying, an old saying, that the land and the people are one, and the land that is inhabited by the Paku and Navat is some of the harshest on Bajor ever. And this is a note I did not bring up in that episode, but Dan Curry used tropical, lush Laotian jungle to put in that exterior
shot. That's right.
So that doesn't look harsh at all. It was a very sort of, you know, so it was like, oh,
what
no.
What is Laotia? That's a new word for me.
Laos. Laotian jungle. Laos? It was Laos. The country of Laos, close to Vietnam.
Wait, but just again on the side note, they're talking about the Paku and the Navat. They came from Bajor. This planet where the jungle was wasn't their planet. That was where the square, the... It was a different place.
No,
that was,
that's Bajor. That's a part of Bajor.
It's a part of Bajor, but I'm saying the Paku and the Navat could be somewhere else on Bajor that's very rocky. No, like the Laos looking place.
When they showed the exterior, they showed the exterior of the building that the guy lives in. The Sarah lives in. Remember that? They showed his the town square is surrounded by lush jungle from Laos. That's a Laos, you know, a picture that he took and melded it together.
Wait. Now I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
that was a moon.
That was not a moon. That is Bajor itself. That's a part of Bajor that's supposedly harsh.
I was like saying, you're so confusing me.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because I watched that thinking that that was my show, not this one.
I know.
I was like, I got myself confused.
You sent us all the reaction videos for that show, and I was like, uh-oh. She thinks. Yeah. I think she's.
No, I have. There were more reactions for that than there were for this one. It was so funny. But it was okay. I liked that episode.
Yeah.
I did too.
Fun episode.
I gave it a very high. It was
Robbie gave it an 8.
I gave it an 8. Everyone else gave it like a 5.
Storyteller.
The storyteller.
Yeah, Robbie gave it
that
a high
manipulative
score.
Old man.
So she beamed down to the thing and then this gorgeous moon planet, and then this man and woman with these alien gardening tools kind of step up and trap her, and they're pointing the tools at her. Yeah. And then we go to a break.
Right. Opening credits.
Mm-hmm. Opening credits. We come back after the title and we meet this old man. We meet Brian Keith.
Yeah.
He's in the doorway of this like cabin or something.
Cottage is what they say.
Yeah, he's a farmer. His name's Mullabok. And he and Kira talk. And all he knows is farming. And he tries to go inside and talks about farming, then he tries to go inside, but she holds the door open.
Yeah.
And then she starts spouting this farming knowledge, which who would have thought that Kira knew farming, but
she was making
it. Was she making it?
I think she
was. Because he seemed to be impressed.
No, she grew up on Bajor. She knows it.
Yeah,
it's
but
like,
he turns
where
her, he says, he goes, you come from farmers. And she goes, actually, no, I'm just trying to make something. I'm trying to make sure that I can hold this door open. I can't
before
hold it
my
open.
Arm gives out something.
Yeah, I'm just, please, you know.
I thought it was real farming, like the little bit she knew from her dad. She was trying to use that to like delay him or something.
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
It was
but
cute.
He invites her in for
banter.
Supper. Yeah. Yes. And it was a cute repartee, witty repartee between the two. I love how he goes, yeah, you're half pretty. When he said that, I was like, what? Like, so he's kind of digging into her. So what that writer wanted originally was that hard ass sort of old guy. And you hear it in the dialogue, I think.
Yeah. He also mentions he doesn't like uniforms, which I thought that was a nice.
Right. Well, he says they don't like uniforms. That that's why they've got the pitchfork at you. Right.
But so I don't feel like he's a hard ass in it at all.
Right.
No. No,
grumpy, yes, curmudgeon-y, a little, but not really. Yeah. He seems lonely to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's with two mute people that can't talk
to him. Oh, my God.
He can't talk to him.
He picked the roots that take 3 hours to cook so that Kira's stuck there for 3 hours.
She is.
Yeah.
She is.
And just then when he's saying that, I'm thinking, oh, please let Dax know, because I'm already starting to worry about her in my mind watching the show.
Because like, she's sitting in the runabout waiting.
Okay.
Yeah. You're in orbit. You're just like doop-de-doop. Yeah. Tapping your fingers. Exterior space shot of the station, then promenade upper level. We see Nog is on a mission with Jake tagging along. They see the individual that they are looking for in the lower level. They head down. Nog approaches this Lesepian captain, and he knows that this captain does business with the Cardassians. He tries to sell the Yamak sauce to to the captain for latinum, but the captain says, no, I don't have latinum, but I can make a trade. Nog starts to walk away, but Jake is the one that says, wait a minute, let's find out. What does he want to trade? And he says, self-sealing stem bolts, an order for a Bajoran that could not pay. He still has it. Nog and Jake confer and they agree. Okay, one catch. How to get a hold of Quark's Yamek sauce, because that hasn't been they have no plan for that as of yet.
I loved first the makeup
on that alien was amazing.
Was so cool.
Yeah, oh my gosh. It was cool. It was super cool. I want to know what was the significance? Did I miss? Why was he so Nog so insistent about 5 bars of
latinum?
He wants profit.
He just wants
But he was so stuck on that number. Yeah. It felt like it should have some meaning for him to be so stuck on 5, as we find out as we.
Yeah, he asked for it again. But then later on, doesn't he go 5 bars? Okay, 4.
Okay, I'll take 3. Actually, I'll take just 1.
We'll get there. Yeah.
He's not the best negotiator, to be honest. Not yet.
Yes. No, he's trying to be a good
Ferengi.
I think they're a pretty good team. I think they're very cute together.
I love the two of them in this episode. I just absolutely love them. So good.
I'm not going to say it every scene, but I do want to say for this one, the boys are on the second level. The camera's down below. Les pans them all the way over, sees them see something and start to run. The camera continues to pan down and find the aliens.
So the captain.
Finishing up something. Mm-hmm. And then as the alien gets up and starts to walk in the promenade, the boys re-enter the frame and turn into a walk and talk.
Great shot.
Unbelievable.
So good.
Unbelievable. Yeah. The efficiency and the connection and without any
That's
cutting.
Another efficiency. Yes. Another efficiency.
And can we just add to his, Les's demeanor on a set? Very relaxed.
Oh my God. It's like he's on Valium.
If he lost
he
had a good reason to, but he is so relaxed. Seriously. Yes. He had a good reason to, but just think of him as being very, relaxed and
you feel comfortable around
him.
That's the bottom line. Yeah.
It's important as a director to set that tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Back in the cottage interior, Kira finally hails Dax, telling her to head back without her because she's going to be staying for dinner. She's got to clean these roots, which will take 3 hours to soak. She's going to get a ride back with one of the thermologists, and Kira is helping prep this dinner. She looks at the Bajoran female and says, you know what? You don't talk much. And this is when Molobok says, she doesn't talk at all. Cardassians took care of that. Kira informs Molobok that the moon's core will be tapped in 7 days. He says he knows that, but the moon is his home. Ever since he escaped from a Cardassian labor camp 40 years ago, he says his life is here. If he leaves, he will die. So he'd rather die on the moon. That's just plain and simple. That's
and
everything
that's never
about
explained.
Him.
Why, if he leaves, he'll die?
Yeah, see, that is never explained. But I feel like this
ridiculous.
Is his way of life. It's and that dramatic. This is all he knows.
A broken heart.
A broken heart. He loves this moon. He's the first person to tame this moon.
But then why not
as he
say
says
that in some way? You know what I mean? Because it's like, feels like you
it
have a heart condition
imply,
that will, your heart's going
to
blow up if you.
Right. What is it? Is it a health thing? Yeah. Are you going to explode?
Back there.
I hear you.
Back on the DS9, we go to Quark's. Nog and Jake are visiting Quark. Quark is really on edge in this scene. He's like, as soon as they come in, he's already wound up. And he grabs Nog's ear and scolds him for giving some free refill to someone who dropped their drink last night, didn't charge them. He grabs his ear.
Right.
Which you don't want to do that to Ferengi because they might get turned on.
Well, if you grab it lightly, that's
Oh, I see.
If you grab it hard, that's not good.
Yes.
No. And Jake is not with him, actually. Jake is standing away on the other side of the bar at the time.
Yes.
So
he tells him that he wants to move this Yamek sauce in the storage room to make room for some incoming low-carb beans that are arriving. And Quark says, he doesn't want to see this Yamek sauce ever again. He wants it, he'd be happy to never see it. Tells Nog, as he leaves, he turns and he says, you're a good boy, Nog. Yeah. Which I thought that was a sweet
it
moment.
It was a touch
it
of
was.
I thought
I'm glad
it really
they gave
was.
That to Armand. I mean, to Quark to have like, I'm sorry I blew up.
Yeah.
All parents are aunts, uncles, family, your village that raises you has those moments where
yeah.
we
I think yeah, regret. I think it also, yeah, I think it also shows that Quark is aware that Nog is kind of looking up to him and trying yeah. to impress him. Like it shows an awareness of Quark and Nog, you know, yeah. gives Nog what he needs.
Well, first he insults him that he's like his father.
Well, yeah, yeah, he says, and I warned you about being like, you're taking the habits of your father, which is an empathetic. If you think about it, Rom and Nog are much more empathetic than Quark yeah. is in yeah. terms of yeah. people spilling their drink. Oh, sorry. We'll replace that. Right. So they're being nice. And so it shows they have a heart, whereas Quark is kind of cold hearted. I think he's yeah. only about profit. But after he realizes that he's gotten the okay to get rid of the sauce, he looks across the bar to Jake and gives him this mission accomplished fist pump, which Jake yes. returns in return. And it's a lovely moment between the two of them. They're
love
very excited.
That relationship. Yeah. I love those two. They're
yeah.
so
yeah,
good.
Me too. And yeah. they're so impossibly cute.
Yes. Super cute.
Yes.
We go back to the cottage I think,
interior.
Next,
yes.
right?
Yeah. Kira, Mullabok, and the two mute yeah. Bajorans are seated at the dinner table. Mullabok recounts a story of how he stowed away on the Cardassian survey vessel, made many stops in the Bajoran system looking for possible mining sites. When they arrived at Jurato, he overpowered the entire crew and took what he needed to start a new life on the moon. Kira is really surprised that he single-handedly took out 6 Cardassians. And as the first settler on the moon, he had to figure out how to farm the barren land, but he tamed the land. And Kira talks about how they hung on like fanatics to eventually defeat the Cardassians. And Mullabok walks outside. Kira follows. He talks about...
But he's that fanatics moment, you know. Yeah. He sort of says, how did you survive with the yes. Cardassians? So he's smart. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she says, oh, because we were fanatical about right. it or whatever. Yeah. And
he's basically saying, you and I
like
are the
me.
Same. You're like
exactly.
me. You and I are the same person, basically.
Mm-hmm. I love Brian Keith is so good in this episode. Yeah.
Gosh,
we said it before, but the naturalism, the charm, mm-hmm. I think
yeah.
he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah. 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 You can't help but really like him and want to root for him.
Yeah. Kira even roots for him too, because outside at the kiln, she says that she sympathizes with him, but he cannot stay there. But the minute, and she explains, the minute they start tapping the crust, all this carbon and sulfur compounds are going to come up to the surface and you cannot breathe the air. He's going to die, yeah. right? Mullabok says, Tequila. Yeah, it's unlivable. Mullabok says, well, tell them they can start cracking this moom apart whenever they're ready. I'll be here. That's all he says. And he's like, do what you want. You know, I'm not going to leave. Cargo Bay, Jake and Nog standing amongst the 100 gross of self-sealing stem bolts. O'Brien arrives and asks about the cargo. And Nog says it belongs to Uncle Quark. O'Brien wants Nog to inform Quark that he needs to stop bypassing the import procedures. O'Brien has never seen these before. O'Brien leaves. Nog has an idea. He feels that the Bajoran who ordered these stem bolts in the first place would definitely know what these stem bolts are used for. And his name must be on the shipping codes. Jake finds this scanner on top of one of the containers, scans the labeling. Guess what? Circo Chano's name, address, and contact info pops up. And Jake wonders if Circo will be mad that they have his stem bolts. Nog says, no, he couldn't afford them. And they can offer them. They can offer these stem bolts to sell back to him at a discount. So super happy that they're going to make a
super
profit.
Smart.
Super smart too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I love it. Those two. They're wonderful. Any other comments on this scene? Anybody?
No, because I'm jumping to the next. So okay. What happens to them. So I don't want to say it.
Oh, okay. All right. So we'll say that. Yeah, we'll say that later. We're back at ops. Kira gets off the turbo lift. Dax is relieved that Kira finally made it back. And she asks Dax if Sisko is alone in his office. Dax says that Minister Taran is in there with him. We then cross into the office and Taran doesn't understand. Why won't they leave like the other 47 people? Here's that number, Robbie. 47 is used on Voyager a lot. 47 is here on DS9 mm-hmm. now. It's like, what's happening?
Why?
I don't. Numerology. It's something with the writers.
Is it?
Yeah.
There's a whole ancient. No, I thing. Don't know. I have no idea.
He just made this up, but yeah, it's probably
I'm like,
right.
Wow, 47, but four. You'd have to add four and
plus
seven
is
first.
11.
Yeah.
Right.
And we had.
Then it's two. Right. It yeah, really right. comes down to two.
Down to two. Yeah. Sisko asks if there's anything they can offer to make Mullabok leave, and Kira says that's absolutely nothing. There's nothing that he wants. So she talks about using this alternative method, phased energy retrieval, to extract the energy. Minister says that'll take way too long. And if you cannot get rid of this people, if you can't evacuate them, I will find somebody else to do this. And she says, okay, I'll do it. I'll handle it. And she's off. And this time she comes back with two security officers.
Yes. And she sends them off to go.
She sends
them
off
those...
to get the two mute Bajorans. And
did you see one of the security guys?
She warns them, like, be careful. Yeah, they're afraid of uniforms.
Yeah.
She says, be careful. And yeah, that was very funny. And I noticed Tom Wargo was one of the security guys. So I immediately went, oh, yeah.
No.
There's going to be a fight.
Which one?
The second one.
That was Morga?
Yeah, wow. Morga was there.
I didn't know.
There's going to be a stunt because Morga is one of these guys. So.
Oh, my God.
By the way, Tom Morga is 82 years old now. I looked it up. He's 82.
Wow.
He did so many stunts on all of our shows.
She tells those other officers, just go to their cottage. If they're not there, just take their belongings and get them ready to evacuate. And he goes, should we ask permission? He's like, no, just do it.
Just pack them.
Yep. Mullabuck comes out and looks at Kira and says, you're going to use that on me? Pointing at her phaser. And she's like, look, no, I wouldn't do that.
That was a big phaser on her hip, by the way.
That wasn't Starfleet.
Not Starfleet. It was Bajoran.
I don't know what that was.
Can I just say, why didn't she have it on the first time she went down to the planet?
Yeah, she should have had it then.
Yeah.
She definitely should have had it then. She didn't
have
it.
That's a cool looking weapon. She should always have it. I think
it's her Bajoran phaser. Yeah.
Mullabuck comes out and tells Kira a story about a two-headed Malgorian, which is sort of a bit of a metaphor, and he continues to finish building the kiln. As Kira walks towards the cottage to gather Mullabuck's belongings, you hear a yell from one of the security officers saying that he's been stuck with a farming implement. He's been stabbed in the stomach. He's holding on to Baltram. The other one, Morga, is holding on to Kina. Mullabuck sees Kina being restrained and goes ballistic. He just starts to choke him, throws him on the ground. Then the other guy who's been stabbed ends up phasering
Brian Keith.
Brian Keith, he goes down like a sack of potatoes.
I wonder who doubled stunt
and
double.
And then Kira
Brian
freaks
Keith,
out. She's
yeah,
like,
Kira
no!
freaks out. She, yeah. She's kneeling there like Romeo and Juliet or something.
She's not happy.
Help him! Emergency!
She's
very,
not happy.
Very dramatic.
Exactly.
Very dramatic. But poor Brian Keith falling back and bang, I saw his head hit. He had to be doubled.
That was a double for sure, right? There's no way that he did that. Brian Keith is, this was 1993.
No, they wouldn't.
Episode,
they wouldn't let me
right?
fall back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, within 4 years, less than 4 years after the airing of this episode, Brian Keith passes away. So this is the twilight
it's from
of
that
his
fall.
Life.
It was from
it's
that
from
fall.
The fall. No, it's not from the fall. That's horrible. Akira orders the officers to beam up to the runabout and call the station for Dr. Bashir. Now we see an exterior space shot of the station. And of course, we're back in Sisko's quarters now. Nog is tinkering with a circuit board. Jake is beside him. They're speaking with Serko, who says he still can't see them. So clearly, Nog is doing this on purpose. He doesn't want them to see them. It's two kids,
like doing
right?
A...
Yeah.
Hello.
Everything. Yeah. Hello.
Can
are you
hear
there?
Me? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
he
they
asks
can't
for
see
their names.
Kids.
Yes, they hesitate. And Nog comes up with the No J Consortium, which is kind of smart on his part. He's thinking
very
on his
funny.
Feet.
Genius.
Yeah.
Very,
very
funny. Nog says he has the 100 gross of stem bolts. And immediately, Serko's like, you've got my stem bolts? And he wants Latinum. Once again, he's really, really intent on getting Latinum. Serko doesn't have any, but he can exchange 7 tessipits of land for the stem bolts. Nog thinks this is worthless dirt, but Jake convinces him otherwise. And Jake says that they need proof of ownership of the land, and Serko agrees. And that is
Serko sounded, or Chano, or whatever. Is it
Serko Chano? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Serko Chano. He sounded like some guy from Brooklyn to me or something.
Like, didn't it sound like an old school 40s sort of like, and now
maybe it was something like that. Yeah. Like, I remember money. Yeah, I remember.
I was proud of Jake because I was like, yes, land. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Land. Very responsible.
Yeah.
Very
but responsible. Just an interesting voice to use for Serko, though. I don't know who voiced that voice, but it seemed a little out of place. Not
DS9. You're right. It wasn't New York. It was more of that radio announcery.
Yeah. It's like, and now horse number 7 is coming around the track. He had that kind of weird voice.
Yeah,
and it's
like
why
how
are you
do people talk
like that?
I find that fascinating, though. When you watch different eras of things of how people spoke and their tone.
I thought
and everything,
he was Ferengi.
Amazing.
I thought Serko was Ferengi. So it sounds more like a Ferengi voice, like the Negus
it
coming
just
in.
It sounded weird. No, yeah. It was a weird interchange.
Yeah.
Okay, so we go back to the cottage down on the moon, the beautiful moon, and Bashir's working on Millibok's injuries, and he calls when Millibok calls Kira Neeris, Nerys.
He asked for
I wrote it down spelling,
now.
But yeah. I
it's
forgot.
It's okay. Nerys. I can help out. I've heard it for a lot more than you.
Yes. So he calls Kira Nerys, and Bashir like turns around like, wait, what's going on? They must know each other more intimately than he thought. So Kira heads outside. Millibok wonders why Kira didn't just sweep all of them off while he was unconscious and send him back. But he tells Bashir he's not going to leave. Bashir goes outside to Kira outside the cottage and relays that he's still refusing to leave. And this is when Kira decides to stay and take care of him, which is just like, but this is why I think the charming choice that Brian Keith made works, because it motivates Kira to care. And if she felt like she was being bullshitted or manipulated, she would have just, I think, taken him right away.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Yeah. If it were different, then it would be, or forcibly, they would take him forcibly or let, you know, que sera, sera.
But this is the first time.
You're 107. You're going to die anyway. We're going to go.
Yeah. But Robbie,
he was an asshole.
Did you understand that Kira Nerys, because I thought that Nerys was her last name, but that's not. It is her first name.
Yeah.
And it's the same way that certain cultures, and most notably the Chinese, always say last name first and then first name second. So it's the same order there. And I was confused. I thought Nerys was her last name.
I did too.
No, it's a first.
Yeah. First name.
Major Kira Nerys. So that sort of says it.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Flipped around. She does tell him she's going to stay, tells Bashir she's going to stay, take care of him. She starts working on his kiln that he's talked about. He's wanted to finish this. Yeah. Very important to him.
She did a good job too.
Yeah, she did a really good job.
Yeah, this is better also than where he did.
Much better. Yeah, she's a much better kiln builder. She also takes off her jacket and is wearing a very fancy t-shirt underneath.
Is that standard issue for, I mean, it looked like kind of fashion-y. Yeah. It was like, wait a minute.
It was very fashion-y. That's what Bajorans wear under their
uniforms.
Outfits, I guess.
She needs to be sexy underneath that uniform.
It was a good-looking t-shirt.
Didn't make
it. It
looks like
she
the t-shirt
great.
They tried to, they tried to put me in a shirt like that once.
Oh, they did.
Too feminine for you?
Yeah.
I put my foot down.
No.
Robbie was not happy.
We go to the commander's office. Did they ever put you, Terry, in something that you just were like, no, I'm not wearing this?
Oh, no. I think that those kind of instances, I was put in things that made me feel uncomfortable. But I think for me, with thinking of it as that's Bob Blackman's job, I have a suck it up buttercup kind of attitude with that kind of thing. I really think sometimes actors can shoot themselves in the foot by saying, no, it should look like this, or I know my character better than you do. It's like, well, you're taking away all the input of every other department that helps create your character.
Pretty much.
So, you know,
you just realize that you didn't have to mow Bob Blackman's lawn. Bob Blackman will mow his own lawn, basically, right? You don't need to do his work.
Okay, so that's just
this
kind
is Robbie's,
like a
Robbie's
little
wisdom.
That's my saying.
Me.
I shared that saying with Garrett
that
the other day.
The other day.
Really?
See, Robbie, just mow
Robbie,
your own lawn.
You influence me a lot, Robbie. You know
makeup
that, right?
Makeup would bother me more. If something on my face felt like it, like,
Then
like
that
makeup or something,
Yeah, that's harder for me. Like if they draw outside your lip line or something like that, it's like, no, I was lucky on Deep Space. I'm not saying that.
You
look
great.
Did you ever do prosthetic makeup on Deep Space for any reason at all?
Yes.
Oh, it does come up later. Okay.
Yeah.
Just curious.
You got to
watch
the show.
Robbie and I both did.
You got to watch the show and you got to join the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole.
Nice, Terry.
Patreon. And what level?
Any level.
Any level
you want.
Yeah. Whatever level up to know the real untold story.
You're good, Terry. You are
Thank
good.
Thank you.
So we go back to the commander's office.
I just want to say, Terry, you are the Delta Flyers salesman of the year.
You
salesperson of the year. Look at you.
Wow. You're our cover girl.
You are. You're literally our cover girl. Oh my
you
God.
Are. All right.
I will take that.
Back to our story.
Tell us.
We're in the commander's office now. Bashir's filling Sisko in on his visit down to the planet. Sisko says that Kira can stay temporarily on doctor's orders in this scene. And Bashir says, but that's not true. And Sisko goes, no, you can make it true. I love this scene.
It's a great scene.
Sisko's so smart. Yeah. Okay, that's so Avery too. It's not just, you know, Captain Sisko. It's definitely an Avery-ism.
An Avery thing.
To like, let me help you put that in your mouth.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he says, he goes, Commander. Oh, he goes, okay. Commander, I advise that Major Kira remain on Jurado for humanitarian reasons. For how long? He whispers. Sisko's like, the next day or two. For the next day or two, sir. And
thank you,
Sisko's
doctor.
Like, I'll consider that.
I'll consider that request. Dismissed.
Amazing scene. The comedy premise of it is beautiful. It's a beautifully conceived kind of comedy premise. I love
it. It's interesting because you've got Sisko controlling the conversation with Bashir. You've got Mullabok controlling the conversation with Kira. So it's happening on the moon surface and on the station at the same time.
Yeah.
And with the boys.
And the boys.
And with the boys.
Yes.
Yes.
There's a lot of opportunities for everyone.
Going on. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Two sides of the story.
Yes. Well, both of these stories kind of have that, that echo, their themes echo each other. This sort of manipulation and sort of trying to prove yourself in some ways. And
open your eyes. Yeah.
But like the last episode, Robbie, I feel like the A and B storyline are closer to A and A minus again.
They're very close.
They're close.
Very close.
Yeah.
We go back down to the cottage. Kira's using some kind of medical device to treat Mullabok's wounds. Mm-hmm. And she gets really mad when he asks what the others will do to her because she stayed. She gets very triggered by that. Mm-hmm. And then she stands by the window, tells the story of an ugly tree when she's a child, this gnarly tree. And he says something like, it's nasty, right? And she goes, yes, nasty, nasty. And then he asks her if she cut it down when she was a child. And she says, I don't know yet. So it's like, oh, that's just a metaphor.
Yes, let's talk in metaphor the entire 100%.
Time. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. But Sisko calls and tells Kira he's coming down.
Yeah.
And
she says, no.
Yes.
Don't come down.
Yeah.
Yes. And Mullabok also says, wow, he doesn't have much faith in you. So he's trying to separate her from, you know, her captain. But he beams down into the garden, comes and knocks on the door. Kira opens it.
Oh, no, not Kira. Remember, she tries to go open it, but then goes, it's still my home. And he gets
that's right. Yeah. He goes and opens it. And then she joins him in the doorway. But he answers the door. He's super rude to Sisko, basically.
He is.
Kira tells him, dude, go back inside. Tells Mullabok, go back inside.
Yeah.
She steps outside with Sisko and she starts working on this kiln while she talks to Sisko.
Yeah.
And I love this scene because Sisko reminds her that she has an important job, that she has a purpose, that that's her destiny, and that this may be his.
And can I just mention my favorite line before her going out? Mullabok says, talk to him as long as you want. Why don't you tell him the story about your tree? It's what he says. I'm like, oh my God. Mullabok's great.
Mullabok's awesome. I love the scene with Sisko and Kira, though, because Sisko says, for the first time, I think, you're a friend now. Like, we're close, and I value you. Yeah. I love that scene. He did a great job.
And he reminds her that now she's on the other side of it.
Right. She's not the rebel anymore. She's not the underground fighter anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this the first time that he actually says how valuable she is to him in the series? Would you say that? I think
she says how valuable.
No, that Sisko says how much you mean. Doesn't he say, you know, Kira, you really mean a lot
to him?
Yes, to him.
Yes.
Does he ever say that?
He's being very empathetic. He knows exactly how she feels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But she has to detach from being one of them again.
Correct.
She is no longer one of the victims. Yeah. She is in charge. Right, she has the power to say, no, you. And he says to her, Sisko says, he has already written his fate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you have yet to write yours.
Yes. Yeah. This so is not your destiny. This right. may be yeah. his, but it's not yours. I feel no. like on this planet.
And yeah. you're not responsible for him.
Yeah. I feel like Sisko in a way is taking the training wheels off of Kira's bicycle in a way. Like, you can do this, you know, you yeah. can take care of this guy.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. And she gets choked up about him.
She
really.
Does.
Yeah. She does.
It's means a, I lot love to this her. Scene, by the way.
It's and, very difficult but, for her to open up and feel safe. So yeah. that was huge that you said he huge. Liked her. I like you.
Ah. Yeah. Also, I will say again, Les Landau knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
There is a low angle shot where she's listening to Sisko in the yeah. background and he's out of focus. And you see, you hear what he's saying. You see him, but he's not in focus. The focus is on her.
And her reaction. Listening.
And her yeah. reactions.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's amazing to be yeah. there yeah. and in that character's experience, not in what Sisko's yeah. saying, but in her absorbing it and being affected by it. Les Landau freaking knocked it out of the park.
It's totally it would be totally excellent. Different if he shot coverage on Sisko, yes. right? While he's saying that to her yep. and, mm-hmm. and the fact that he
back and forth.
Yeah, back and forth. No, it's not as effective. No, it's not as effective.
It's not. It's leave not as good storytelling.
Yeah. Leave the camera let us just on Kira's watch face.
It. Yeah. yeah. It's a visual medium. Let it be a visual medium.
Yeah.
Yeah. We go inside the cottage now. A little bit of a time has passed. And when at the end of the last scene, though, Sisko says there's a runabout standing by. And he leaves it up to her. He beams yeah. back up
yeah.
and kind of leaves this decision up to her. So we go inside the cottage. Kira and Millibok are sleeping. He's having nightmares, talking in his sleep. Clearly very agitated. She gives right. him a hypospray. He wakes up. And she is very gentle with him, very tender with him in the scene.
Yeah.
And
because his nightmare is all about, you know, the Cardassian occupation, basically. Yeah. Clearly, he was, yeah, he names a name, Lucilla, which I'm guessing was maybe his wife, his somebody wife, who was yeah, probably. Possibly killed by the Cardassians. So it's a hardcore, you know, dream or nightmare that he's having.
Mm-hmm. But she they go to fall asleep again. And he says, wait, you know, get that chair and bring it over here like a real nurse. And, you know, sit
you're
by
my
me.
Nurse.
You're my nurse. Like, you need to be sitting right next to me, which is very sweet. Again, that's why I don't get the writer's idea that this guy was manipulative. There's yeah. too
how
many
would she stay? Yeah. How would she
moments.
Stay? Yeah. yeah, yeah. It's totally worth
and
it.
She puts her hand at the mm-hmm. end. She, you know, he closes his eyes and she puts her hand like on his heart or his chest mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very sweet.
This is when she should have whispered, Uncle Bill, sleep well. Like that. That's.
Go away.
All right. So go we away. Go back to
Quarks. Okay, Robbie. Back to Robbie.
Back to
our Quarks. Story.
Go to Quarks. The boys are playing cards. They're arguing over the value of this land. You know, Jake's like, land is worth a lot. And Nog's like, it's dirt. It's just dirt. And then Odo and Quark pass by and they're discussing some mystery consortium called No Jay. Quark's like, I don't have a clue who that is. And he goes to check the security transmissions. Yeah.
The way he played it before he goes to check, I yeah. thought he knew the way he was.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. The way the scene was, I thought yeah. that Quark knew
no.
from the name exactly who it was. So it was like confusing. It was
I
like,
did,
a
I
little...
didn't get that. I did not. Get
I didn't
that.
Either. I didn't think he was knew.
Totally clueless. No. Yeah. And
wow. Okay. And,
that's interesting that you're just assuming that Quark's always lying, maybe, because yeah. I could see why people would assume.
No.
Never believe
I,
Quark.
Yeah.
But we no, do. Get... I yeah. assume. Yeah. Well, yeah, he does lie a lot.
We he does. We do get an excellent piece of information from Odo. He says that he was contacted by a government official this morning and that they want to build a reclamation facility on a strip of land owned by four different people. Three of yes. them have agreed to sell, but the government doesn't know how to reach the fourth, the No-Jay Consortium.
The No-Jay so Consortium.
These youngins, these teenagers have basically walked backwards into the most amazing deal that they can possibly have had, right? I mean, this is yep. huge.
So Quark goes over, he opens that drawer where he's got these liquid vials.
Liquid vial chips.
That I remember when the first one came out and we talked about it. And I think yeah. Armin was like, Armin goes, I don't think we ever see those again. We've now seen them like three or four times
now.
Right. Yeah. And the first one was like yeah. this long, slender piece of that I thought they looked like a piece of plexiglass, right? Yeah. A little piece of like kind of a very thin brick. But then they were the liquid ones. I can't remember which time, which episode
and
that was.
And now they're liquid again. Yes.
And they're just staying liquid.
They're staying
let's
liquid
stay on top of that. Let's stay on top of that.
We're going to be tracking the liquid security vials.
We will be in charge of continuity.
I don't get why they're
this.
Liquid.
It doesn't make any sense.
No, I don't either.
No, it's weird. Maybe. It feels like it should be with Dr.
That's
Bashir.
That's what Robbie called it. It's a Cardassian technology. It has to be. Right?
Okay. It's got to be. That's why it's liquid. Because
Federation is
that.
Isolinear chip. It's not a vial of liquid.
Yeah.
You're correct, Garrett.
All right.
Isolinear chips are the best.
They're way
because they're Starfleet.
Okay.
And you can't break them.
So what happened? Wait.
Oh. So what happens? Okay.
Back to
our
story.
Quark goes over. He opens the drawer. He pulls out these liquid vials.
Yeah.
And he's trying to look up some security transmissions, I guess, to find
he's trying to figure out who it is. Yeah.
And then Nog comes behind him.
Uncle Quark?
And Quark goes, get out of here. Like, I'm busy. Or he's trying to get rid of him. And then Nog mentions a business opportunity.
Yeah.
Quark turns around. And then you see Armin go.
Oh, you are Jano Consortium. Yeah.
Yes.
He's like, Nog.
Yeah, and that's all he says, but you know he's figured the whole thing out.
I think he's proud of him, though. I do feel like there's this sort of like, wow, you did something that I did not think you could do, but you did it.
Yeah.
He's happy.
We go back to the cottage. Kira wakes up, and she wakes up because there's a noise outside. So she goes outside, sees Mullabok is his kiln is almost done. And so she comes out to help him finish it. And they talk a little, it's finished. And he says, I never thought that I would see this done.
Yeah.
And then she goes back in the cabin.
Yep.
As he lights the kiln. So now we see some fire, which I want to hear about your thoughts about the fire. Cause that was a lot of fire.
Oh my God. I was so nervous watching.
I was
this
nervous
scene.
Too.
I was freaking out. Is this,
I feel it.
Do you
it's
think Robbie
VFX.
And do you think Terry was this, everything was on 18, stage 18, this entire, am I right? They didn't go on location because my goodness, they must have had the fire department on
absolutely.
Standby staying on the set because she lit it in multiple, she lit that whole cottage on fire. Yeah. I was like, what the?
I wonder, okay, so we'll get to the fire. I want to back up for a second.
He's
lighting the kiln. She goes inside and then, once he gets a kiln lit, she comes out with all these bags. She's packed his stuff. She says, his job is done. He finished the kiln. Go ahead, Terry.
I was going to say, he says, what does he say? He says,
when she comes back out?
Yeah, because he says an ultimatum. The only way that I will leave.
He says, as long as that cottage is standing, I stay here. Right.
Exactly. As soon as he said that, I'm like, fatal mistake.
Yeah,
it's
you should have said
gone.
That. Yeah, and but instead of hitting the cottage, she first blows. She phasers the kiln, and he's
like,
"What
I don't
are
get
you
that.
Doing?" Yeah, I mean, I was like, "You didn't
that
have
just
to phaser
dramatic.
The kiln. That was a little weird." Yeah. So, but then after that,
yeah, and I thought it was weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
She takes the little stick and she lights it with the kiln fire, and then lights different parts of the cottage on fire as Mullabok stands there just watching, shocked that this is happening.
She torches the place.
Makes
torches
sense.
The whole place.
But leave the kiln alone. Take care of the cottage.
Yeah. The kiln could have been like a memorial to him.
It kind of like, they worked so hard on it. I was like,
you
what?
Just finished it.
Yes.
I know.
But to show the difference between Voyager and DS9, never once in 7 years did anybody on Voyager torch anything like we
I
didn't
think
we,
that's
we
a
never,
lot of fire
no,
we're pyros we were pyros
you are
it was again it was nerve-wracking watching that scene
I think it was a VFX enhancement. They probably had some fire but I don't think that all of that
part would have VFX. You're saying that
like if they had a
once
little bit
on
of fire
yeah
then they can expand it and make it look bigger, I think, because that was too much fire to put on a stage
inside a stage, or it was like, were they at Vasquez Rock?
See,
it
that's what I
like
thought, Robbie.
Outside.
That maybe they were on location, and
maybe when Terry does her documentary and she goes there,
we'll
she
find
can
out.
Answer this question.
Okay,
so join her documentary.
I don't have the answers yet, guys. I'm gonna get there
we
next
it.
Summer. Anyway, so the thing's torched. They have a heart to heart, and she says, he says, if I leave, then I'm going to die. And she says, no, I'm not going to let you.
Right.
And the two of them beam up.
But before that, there's a very, very hardcore statement from Mullabok. He says, you say you're my friend? Prove it. Use that weapon on me. He wants her to basically euthanasia him and end it for him. And she says, nope, can't do it. Then that's when he says, if I leave here, I'll die. He says, no, you won't. I'm not going to let you. Two to beam up and they're gone. Mm-hmm. So,
so sweet. Yeah. I love this relationship. And I don't think he comes back. Does he, Mullabok?
No,
I don't.
How? No, he does not.
Disappointing. So isn't disappointing.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Can I give can I give you one little tiny snippet of information here?
Yes, please. Yeah.
In the interwebs, Mullabok appears briefly in the novel War Child. So it's a DS9 novel where he has Jadzia, you, Terry, pass on a message to Kira that he forgives her for her actions.
Wow. Mm. Cool.
Pretty deep.
Okay, but that's not the same.
I want to see him, Brian Keith. I want to see
Uncle Bill. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I want to see him with him then. I want to see that scene on the... Well, it's too late now.
Well, we can talk about that for Missing
Scenes.
We're
going to let that go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
All right, so my theme for this episode, my lesson, is that home isn't where you are, but it's who you're with.
Mm.
That's what I took away from this.
I like that. Brian Keith, I do like kind that. Of, yeah.
I think Kira teaches him that. And, you know, and in a way, he was home and reassuring to her. Like they built a bond.
Mm-hmm.
And and I think the relationship of the boys, like it's who you're with. That's what feels like home. You know?
Yeah. Okay, 100%. Terry, what do you think? Do you have a lesson on this one?
Yeah, I think very much that if you can't change the situation, a person, your environment, then you have to look inside and go, you know, it's my, I have to change. It's my responsibility, whether I have to leave it, figure out how I fit in the situation, but you know,
sell
this,
the yarmulke sauce or whatever it's called.
Sell the yarmulke sauce and pack your bags and get off
the moon. Be responsible. Yes.
Yeah. Just, this is a new phase. You have to change.
Yes.
Yeah. I, and
killing
again,
yourself is not the option. That's not the option. No.
No.
And I do feel that the last few episodes have similar themes in that, you know, here's a character digging his heels in and not embracing the unknown.
Change,
and that's, and yeah, change. Unknown, and yeah. I think as human beings, we are all afraid of change in a way. We're all wary of like, oh my gosh, we're so used to this routine and now it's going to change and this is going to ruin my life forever. And it's like, wait a minute, you don't know that. You don't know what the future is going to hold. Can you open up your mind to the point where you say, hey, I can try something differently once and see how it goes. Let's try it for goodness sakes. Who knows what's going to happen? So embrace the unknown and don't be so resistant to change that you dig your heels in and basically doom yourself, you know, is my lesson, I think.
Great.
Yeah.
I love these lessons. Always good lessons in Star Trek. Thanks everybody for joining us this week for Progress or Progress for those in
the UK.
In the UK. If you are a Patreon member, stick around for your bonus, amazing, phenomenal material that we're going to keep talking about this episode. If you're not a Patreon patron, check it out, patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers. You can see what you're missing. Mm-hmm. But thanks for joining us for the recap and discussion. Next time we are going to talk about, discuss, give opinions, tell stories, and wander off on tangents as we talk about the episode. If Wishes Were Horses. Thanks, everybody.
See ya.